Rousing each other by this and like language, under the leadership of Boudica, a woman of kingly descent, for they admit no distinction of sex in their royal succession, they all rose in arms. They fell upon our troops, which were scattered on garrison duty, stormed the forts, and burst into the colony itself, the headquarters, as they thought, of tyranny. Cornelius Tacitus. My name is Becca Reiswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So settle in as we explore one of my favorites. Quick bit of news, I will be moving into my new home next month. Depending on how the transition goes and how quickly I get internet access, the podcast may be going dark April 19th. This means there would be no new episode that week, but I would definitely be returning May 3rd, even if I have to find an internet cafe that is still open. Hopefully this update will be rendered pointless, and I'll be able to continue as usual through the move, but I just wanted to give everyone a heads up. Now, on to the episode. I was very excited when England's Barbarian Queen was chosen by my patrons for this week's topic. The story of Boudica's rebellion against Rome is actually the first of the stories I've talked about here that I didn't have at least a passing understanding of before I researched her for this episode. In truth, the only thing I knew about Boudica was that she existed and rebelled against someone in some point of English history, though I would not have been able to guess at the era or who she fought. Diving into the history for this warrior queen and then learning more about the Roman conquest of England has been a truly enjoyable and fascinating journey for me, and I hope you, dear listener, get as much pleasure from this tale. We will be exploring Boudica, who she was, and what she did, and of course we will also take a look at the Roman Empire in England and the tensions that arose around their march for power. Regardless of how you may feel about what Boudica did and whether she should or should not have acted thusly, there can be no debate that she's become a figure of inspiration in history. She's become a legend, in the vein of King Arthur or Robin Hood, though, in my opinion, her story outshines theirs for the simple fact that we know she was real. So, let's enter the fray and learn her tale of victory and woe. A good starting point before jumping into the story is getting to know the players. So let's start with the Romans. Way back in 55 BCE, Julius Caesar began Rome's first attempt to subjugate the British Isles. This initial campaign ended with Caesar instituting what's referred to as client kingdoms. These were regions where the native tribes chose to align themselves with Rome for protection either from other tribes or from Rome itself. The historian Tacitus later wrote, "It was, in fact, the deified Julius who first of all Romans entered Britain with any army. He overawed the natives by a successful battle and made himself master of the coast, but it may be said that he revealed rather than bequeathed Britain to Rome." On the other hand, the poet Lucan put it as Caesar had run away in terror from the Britons whom he had come to attack. Regardless on where you fall on Julius Caesar's invasion, the establishment of client kingdoms by him and future rulers over the next 100 or so years have paved the way for Emperor Claudius to mount a successful conquest beginning in 43 CE. Boudica's uprising didn't come for another 20 years in 60 CE. Rome was slowly marching through England, starting from the southeast and spreading both north and west, modern-day Wales proving to be a stumbling point for some time. They were making headway under the leadership of governors Quintus Varinius and subsequently Gaius Sutinus Paulinus during Nero's reign until Boudica pulled their attention away from Wales. And now before we get into Boudica's rebellion, let's look at who she was. Now, if her story sounds familiar, but the name doesn't quite, it may be because you heard it pronounced as Boudicea instead of Boudica. In truth, there are several different written forms of her name. Boudicea was likely a transcribing error for Boudicca, and the former pronunciation may have come from the Victorians. Language is a strange and fun, ever-evolving mystery. For example, we have no idea about how much of Latin is being properly pronounced. Different scholars will happily swear by different versions. All that to say, I'll be going with Boudica, as that seems to be the accepted pronunciation as far as I can tell. Let's move away from her name and onto the lady herself. Who was Boudica? Much of what we know of the Celtic warrior queen is what the historians Cornelius Tacitus and Cassius Dio recorded. She was descended of a royal line and was described by Dio as being tall with brownish-orange hair that she wore to her hips and possessing a harsh voice and fierce gaze. To complete his word picture, Dio goes on to describe her clothes as a colorful tunic with a cloak fastened by a brooch and a large gold necklace. A truly striking image if you would take the time to picture her. Boudicca is married to King Prasutagus of the Iceni. The Iceni inhabited a region of England along the east coast, around where modern Norfolk is. Rather than being conquered in the beginnings of the Roman invasion in 43 CE, the Iceni chose to ally themselves with the Romans. Several short years later, they staged their first rebellion in 47. Governor Publius Asterius Scapula made plans to disarm the local populace. Their uprising was quickly put down, though interestingly the tribe was able to retain their independence. By the time of Boudicca's rebellion, King Prasutagus had passed away. So what led to Boudicca's rebellion? Well, let's turn to Tacitus and Dio for that. Firstly, Tacitus. Prasutagus, king of the Iceni, famed for his long prosperity, had made the emperor his heir, along with his two daughters, under the impression that this token of submission would put his kingdom and his house out of the reach of wrong. But the reverse was the result. So much so that his kingdom was plundered by centurions, his houses by slaves, as if they were the spoils of war. First, his wife Boudicca was scourged, and his daughters outraged. All the chief men of the Iceni, as if Rome had received the whole country as a gift, were stripped of their ancestral possessions, and the king's relatives were made slaves. It was against the veterans that their hatred was most intense. For these new settlers in the colony of Camulodunum, drove people out of their homes, ejected them from their farms, called them captives and slaves, and the lawlessness of the veterans was encouraged by the soldiers, who lived a similar life and hoped for similar license. Additionally, Dio records that an excuse for the war was found in the confiscation of the sums of money the Claudius had given to the foremost Britons. For these sums, as Decanius Catus, the procurator of the island, maintained, were to be paid back. The fact that Seneca, in the hope of receiving a good rate of interest, had lent to the islanders 40 million sesterces that they did not want, and had afterwards called in this loan all at once, and had resorted to severe measures in exacting it. To put all of that into simpler terms, the Romans had been cruel, using the people and the land to accumulate wealth while stripping status from and enslaving the people. A rebellion is unsurprising when seen through this light. While Governor Gaius Suetonius Polonus was preoccupied with the Welsh, the Iceni joined with other tribes to stage a rebellion against their tormentors. The combined forces chose Boudicca as their leader. The first target was Camulodunum, modern Colchester, which had been the former capital of the Trinovantian tribe, one of the dissident groups. The Roman forces were quickly overwhelmed, and the city was taken in days. The head of Nero was removed from a statue as a trophy. Future governor Quintus Petilius Aurelius immediately staged a counterattack when he got news of the city's capture, but was unsuccessful. Only Aurelius and a handful of his cavalry escaped with their lives. Governor Suetonius decided to be cautious of Boudicca and her forces in light of these two losses and quietly abandoned Londinium in order to mitigate the casualties and prepare for a counteroffensive. The city was sacked, burned to the ground, and any who had not fled were viciously killed. Suetonius was smart, though. After seeing the might of the rebellion Britons, he began to amass his forces and carefully chose a location for his fight with Boudicca. He ensured that the landscape would favor the Romans, selecting a location where he could establish himself with a gorge between him and a large plain and a forest behind him. The gorge would hinder an advance, and the forest would slow down an approach from the rear. While there are many guesses, the actual location of the battlefield is unknown today. Suetonius then gathered a total of 10,000 men, as opposed to the 200-odd that had failed to defend Camulodunum. To rally her forces to the battle, Tacitus records Boudicca's speech thusly. "But now," she said, "it is not as a woman descended from noble ancestry, but as one of the people that I am avenging lost freedom, my scourged body, the outraged chastity of my daughters. Roman lust has gone so far that not our very persons, nor even age or virginity, are left unpolluted. But heaven is on the side of a righteous vengeance. A legion which dared to fight has perished. The rest are hiding themselves in their camp, or are thinking anxiously of flight. They will not sustain even the din and the shout of so many thousands, much less our charge and our blows. If you weigh well the strength of the armies and the causes of the war, you will see that in this battle you must conquer or die. This is a woman's resolve. As for men, they may live and be slaves. To be fair, Tacitus tended to exaggerate speeches or even make them up, as was common for many of his contemporaries. Interestingly, his report of Suetonius's speech is far blunter and plain. Ignore the racket made by these savages. There are more women than men in their ranks. They are not soldiers, they're not even properly equipped. We've beaten them before, and when they see our weapons and feel our spirit, they'll crack. Stick together, throw the javelins, then push forward. Knock them down with your shields and finish them off with your swords. Forget about plunder, just win and you'll have everything. Queen Boudica led a large, fierce fighting force with a spirit and zeal for the fight. They were, however, by all reports, poorly equipped. They charged headlong at the Romans and, as Suetonius had planned, were funneled into a mess. The Roman soldiers threw javelins into their ranks and then marched in formation into the fray. The superior armor and discipline of the enemies proved to be too much for the Britons, and they were overcome. According to Tacitus, 80,000 Britons were slain in the battle. Boudica died not in battle, but by illness. Tacitus claims suicide, while Dio merely says she fell ill. She was buried with great honor and ceremony, though we know not where. For a time, it was believed that her grave was actually under King's Cross Station in London, while a fanciful idea that has given birth to a many great rumor and superstitions around the area, it's been verifiably proven that she is not at Platform 9 and 3 quarters. After the failed rebellion, Rome remained in the British Isles for centuries. The reach of the distant emperor's arm varied over the years until 411, when Rome was finally driven from the land, or abandoned it, depending on what historian you're asking. But that's another story. So that's what happened. Boudica's legacy lives on as a hero of Britain and a defender of freedom. If you're interested in learning more about Boudica, or indeed further tales from Roman history, I highly recommend paging through the works of Cornelius Tacitus. I found the Annals to be a particularly useful, or Cassius Dio's Roman history. They can be dry reads at times, but the stories held within are worth the effort. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to directly help me, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this or past stories, send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as stwhpodcast. But the person who was chiefly instrumental in rousing the natives and persuading them to fight the Romans, the person who was thought worthy to be their leader, and who directed the conduct of the entire war, was Boudica. A Briton woman of the royal family and possessed of greater intelligence than often belongs to women. This woman assembled her army to the number of some 120,000, and then ascended a tribunal which had been constructed of earth in the Roman fashion. In stature, she was very tall, in appearance most terrifying. In the glance of her eye most fierce, and her voice was harsh. A great mass of the tawniest hair fell to her hips. Around her neck was a large golden necklace, and she wore a tunic of diverse colors, over which a thick mantle was fastened with a brooch. This was her invariable attire. Cassius Dio.